ESPN 97.5, KFNC 97.9, HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston, a Gal Media station.
The Killer Bees!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I am Branham, it's Brian behind the glass, and it is a Wednesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Astros win a baseball game yesterday. They're in progress in one right now. Silver Boot is on the line with Yusei Kikuchi on the mound. But Astros yesterday, that's right. I think they got off the schneid. Maybe not from an offensive perspective, only scored 4 runs. But they do win a baseball game. They snap a 3-game losing streak. And, of course, Framber Valdez was outstanding.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, just what the doctor ordered in terms of the performance that Framber gave you, and they did just enough. Jake Meyers with a couple of timely knocks and doing what he needed to do to get some runs in, and they much needed win. And I think that it's obvious from game to game when you get a win like this that it changes everybody's emotions. But they're still leaving, you know, runners on base. They're still not breaking out offensively like you'd like to see. But to do just enough and have Framber shut down the Rangers like that, whether he got the no-hitter or not, the fact that he went deep into the game, gave your bullpen a rest, and really looked like he was in complete command, that was a good sign for this team.
8 wins in a row in Framber's pitching, by the way. 8 wins in a row when he starts a baseball game. He's been really good. You know, Joe wanted to trade him after he went rogue one time. It's probably good that they didn't, because he's been fantastic. He's pitching like the ace. I saw something today, like in the last 5 years in baseball, Framber Valdez has more wins than anybody else.
Wow.
So he's a workhorse. He's the guy that you like at the top of your rotation. And he was fabulous yesterday. How many pitches were you comfortable with him throwing, though? Like getting to the ninth? Because he was cruising there for a while, 40 pitches through four. But he had like low 90s entering the ninth. What was your cap? What was your limit?
110 was to me where I would feel uncomfortable, because I was with you. I mean, when he was in the 60s in the sixth or seventh inning, I was like, boy, he might really be able to finish this with ease. And then in the eighth, when he got into a little trouble and he was throwing some more pitches, I was like, man, I don't want him to see him go over 110. I know he'd love the no-hitter, but I hope he can make quick work and got two outs rather quickly and then, you know, had the walk. But overall, I didn't want to see him go too far over 100 pitches, if at all possible. 110 is where I'd feel uncomfortable. But the fact that, you know, he did what he did was huge for the bullpen.
Yeah, 110 was my number two. That was the one that I tweeted out before the start of the inning. I was like, no more than 110 for Framber Valdez. And then I was starting to think of myself, like, okay, Seager, last hitter, which he was the last hitter, but he hit the home run that broke up the no-hitter. The walks were the things that frustrated me in that inning more than anything else. The leadoff walk, but then you erase him on the double play, but then you walk the next guy. You had 2-3-2 count walks in that ninth inning. So that frustrated me more than the Seager home run, really.
Yeah, I'll tell you what impressed me about him on the flip side was his ability to throw any pitch when he was either down in the count or 3-2 counts or you just must need pitches. He was throwing just about anything he wanted to and being able to locate his pitches, which was huge. Kind of, you know, the walks and the last thing you're talking about, at least during the game, I was impressed by the fact that he could throw whatever he wanted to and seemed to be locating it, which is huge, especially with how good his stuff is.
Yeah, when he has his curveball working like it was working yesterday, which is nasty, and then you add in the element of command, I think he's one of the best pitchers in baseball. There's just times that he'll get a little bit away from his command. There's times where he doesn't have that, you know, sharp curveball like he can potentially have. And then he has moments, too, where he breaks down. And the Astros were all over it yesterday. He wanted that strike call. I think it was to Simeon. It was the walk. And then you had Jeremy Pena immediately go to the mound. Scott Boras' client, Alex Bregman, then also comes to the mound. Because I think Scott Boras tells his clients when you're in a walk year, hey, be a leader and go visit the mound. Josh Miller came out of the dugout. So you know that they're, like, even Todd Callis is talking about how these are moments where he's unraveled in the past. So they were all on the same page of, hey, we need to calm him down. He was fantastic. He was great. I went back and I watched the condensed game this morning. I didn't notice this live on the shin yesterday, other than that high squealing pitch. I noticed that on the shin yesterday when they were using the highlights. It wasn't on my TV, though. Yeah, it wasn't on my TV because I saw people complaining about it on Twitter.
Yeah, I had it for all
And I was
games.
Like, what are these people talking about? And then whenever I saw the Yordan highlight, that's where I heard it.
I had it for even today's game. It was minimalized as much as I don't know if they've even tried to fix it, but it was much lower today and a little lower last night. The first game was almost unbearable. I was just muting it a lot of times and watching it because it was extremely annoying.
Yeah, it was. I saw that on the highlight. I thought it was pretty bad. Now, watching the condensed game, there was Arlington Ranger fans that were cheering for Fromber whenever he came off the field.
Yeah.
They were honoring almost no-hit performance, getting one out away from the no-hit. What do you make of Ranger fans applauding a rival starting pitcher, Fromber Valdez, almost throwing a no-hitter in their park? What would you expect from Astro fans? And people were like saying, well, the Yu Darvish thing. The Astros were awful whenever Yu Darvish did that, and they didn't have the bad blood. The Rangers eliminated the Astros from the playoffs last year. There was bad blood in that series with Adolis Garcia and Brian Abreu. The rivalry has intensified with both teams actually being good at the same time for the first time ever, really, when they're in the American League. What'd you think of the Arlington Ranger fans cheering for Fromber, applauding Fromber as he walked off the mound yesterday?
I haven't said this much in my life, but I thought it was a classy gesture. I thought it was something that, you know, that maybe surprised me a little bit, but I think that true baseball fans do that. You're right. The rivalry mixes into it and has something to do with it. But overall, for me, I thought it was a classy move. I think that the big thing for me is if you know baseball, you appreciate the effort that a guy gives you. And so therefore, if you know, just like a tip of the cap, if you want to give him his due because of the fact that he almost did what he was, you know, a no-hitter that he was trying to do, I have no problem with it.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it if it was Max Scherzer doing it to the Astros.
That's fine.
Like, would you do it if Max Scherzer got to within one out of a no-hitter at Minute Maid Park against the Astros? Are you going to be behind the visiting dugout applauding Max Scherzer as he walks into the dugout?
I am not.
Absolutely not.
I am not because that's obviously I'm more than just a casual and I'm deeply involved in the game. And I'm not a big Max Scherzer guy anyway. Or a Rangers guy for sure. So, yeah, I'm not going to applaud. I'm not going to say anything probably. But at the same time, if as baseball fans you want to tip your cap by applauding a guy's effort, that's fine. That's on them.
More than a casual, deeply involved in the game?
Yeah.
Okay. Offense yesterday, at least you got some things going. Yordan Alvarez hits the home run, hit another one today. But the fastest Astro to 150 home runs. So the offense is starting to show some life a little bit. Yordan hit the homer, which you absolutely needed. You didn't think you were going to need it sure when did. He hit the home run in the eighth inning, but then you did need it. Had the single the other way in the first inning. Jake Meyers with a couple of RBI knocks. The first one didn't hit hard. Second one, he did hit hard. Bregman hit the ball harder than his box score would indicate because he only had the one hit, but he hit the ball hard. I thought maybe the offense showing a little bit of something, showing a little bit of life, perhaps.
No, you hope so. And you look at especially the top of the lineup, but then as it kind of rolls into today, you hope that, you know, it gets to be contagious and a guy like Yordan continues to heat up. That's big. You're seeing Caratini in the lineup today, and that's something you maybe see more frequently so that you can get the best bats possible. But encouraging in the fact that there was a little bit of a wake-up. But yet even you're still struggling with the fact that, again, today you're hitting into double play balls with runners in scoring position. Runners in scoring position still continues to be somewhat of an issue. However, at least they got timely hits last night to get exactly what they need to do. Because I'm with you. I was like, when Yordan hit the home run, I was like, well, you didn't need that, but he needed that because it had been a while since he had hit a home run. I think it was, I forget what they said. I was listening to the radio at one point where they were talking about how long it's been since he hit his last one. But you hope that once he hits one, he gets going, and then he really catches fire again. So Altuve, I think it's been since they were saying today, the pitcher he faced today was the last guy he hit a home run in the first week in June. He hasn't hit one since then.
Yeah, that's wild. 713-780-ESPN at HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. You even had moments yesterday, too, though. Like, you talk about the offense. You had first and third, one out in the first inning, you get nothing. You score one run off a journeyman that's coming off of Tommy John and Malley. So there's been some of the moments for the Astros, even in yesterday's win, where it hasn't been great. You're facing a pitcher today who's not very good, and you have two runs going into the sixth inning. One thing I will tip my cap to the Astros offense yesterday, though, hustle. Like, Hustle always plays. Zach DiZinzo, who is DiZinzo for four in his major league debut. Now, he did double earlier today. He hit what looked like an ending double play. Hustled. Simeon couldn't get it out of his glove. What do you know? He's safe. Very next hitter, Jake Myers with a bloop RBI single. You saw it with Pena a little bit later, who was just blazing. He's one of the fastest players in all of baseball. He's able to leg out the double play, prolongs the inning, and then it eventually leads to a run as well. So the hustle plays, that's good to see because the Astros were able to capitalize that a couple of times yesterday. Did you think Josh Young's home run ball was out? Or I guess it wasn't a home run ball. It was caught at the track for the final out of the game. It would have been a home run at Minute Maid Park.
Yeah.
But Young, after Hader came into the game, walked the first guy he saw. Young, representing the tying run, hits a deep fly ball to right field that Chaz McCormick catches to the track for the final out of the game. Did you think it was gone off the bat?
I did. The sound it made, and then I kept watching. Was it Chaz and Wright? Or was it at that
Chaz, point? Yeah.
Yeah, I kept watching Chaz's reaction, going, please, God, just have him stop moving backwards and plant his feet on the warning track to catch that thing. Because just the sound it made and kind of the angle it took, I thought there was a really good chance that we had a whole new ball game.
Yeah, I didn't think he got all of it. I was surprised it carried that far. I'm on the opposite end. I thought it was going to be like, you know, medium deep right field, and all of a sudden Chaz is drifting, and I'm like, uh-oh, that's not good. But then he caught it, and all is well that ends well. Key from L.A., great game for Fromber, but better home run by Corey Seager to break up the no-hitter. Corey Seager, former Dodger. Key from L.A., like Seager because he's a former Dodger. Key from L.A., there was one guy that won the baseball game yesterday, Fromber, and there was another guy who lost it, Corey Seager. So more impressive what Fromber did. And what Corey Seager hit out, too, by the way, was just a middle hanging slider that was the worst pitch that Fromber threw the entire game.
I do cringe every time he comes up against the Astros, though.
He's so good.
He is just a damn good hitter.
Yeah, he's really good. I also cringe when he's coming up against the Astros because it also feels like he hits the Astros well.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Him and Simeon. I mean, Simeon's could have made a career off of what he's done with the A's, Toronto, and the Rangers with the way he hits Astros pitching. But those two guys in any situation.
Simeon, every time he comes up, I think I'm going to have a heart attack.
Yeah.
I mean, he came up today with two runners on. I was just... You know, expecting him to hit a three-run homer. Thankfully, Kikuchi got him to chase a fastball high to get out of the inning. But, yeah, he strikes fear into me as an Astros fan.
Maybe he's serious.
I know Adolis Garcia used to be that guy, but I don't really have the same kind of feeling as
not
I have when Seager and Simeon come up.
Yes, Astro lineup's a little better with Victor Caratini in it, I think.
No question.
I think he's a little deeper with Victor Caratini in this lineup. 713-780-ESPN. Astros are in progress now. We'll break down the game as soon as it goes final. We'll have some instant reaction. Mark Berman, legend in Houston sports, will be joining us at 4:30 a little bit later in the program. Also, what are other people saying about the Houston Texans when it comes to making the playoffs? Who are you buying? Who are you selling in the NFL? Maybe the Texans are a team that's being sold. Why? Not literally. All right, 713-780-3776. We're on the HR&P listener line, 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. On YouTube at ESPN Houston. On Twitter at ESPN975. Blankers is at Pac-Man Joel. Brian's at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Bees. Coming up next, I think yesterday Fromber looked at the clubhouse, which is a sinking ship, and said, do not worry, I'm the captain now. Fromber lifting the Astros yesterday. Thoughts on that performance? It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN
92.5. ESPN 97.5.
Look at the show. I'm the captain now.
You found the Killer Bees, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
That's what Fromber Valdez looked to the Astros clubhouse and said before yesterday's game. I was wanting Hunter Brown to do it because it happened a day earlier.
I'm the captain now.
But that's what Fromber Valdez said, probably in Spanish, to the rest of the Houston Astros. Whenever that game, before the game in Arlington, looked at everybody and said, I'm the captain now. This is my team. You're jumping on my back, and I'm going to lift us to victory. Because things were bad. Things were bad. Brian gave up on the Astros. Brian said they had no chance to make the playoffs. He said they're going to be a sub-500 team, 80-82. Brian, do you feel any differently today? Do you think the Astros will win the division?
81-81.
Do you see at least 500?
81-81.
So Framber Valdez.
We're moving up.
Framber Valdez in a single game.
Saved them from a losing season.
In a single game changed Brian's point of view from being this losing, terrible, awful, below 500 team to now a team that's at least middle of the pack, a mid-team, a 500 team, a team that's not a losing team. That's what Framber did yesterday. But this is what you want from your ace. This is what you want from a stopper. Because, look, the Astros scored four runs yesterday. It wasn't this great, dominant offensive performance. You scored half of those in the eighth inning whenever it was deep in the game and Framber was trying to pitch a no-hitter. Framber said, I don't need any offense. Yes, our offense is squandering opportunity after opportunity. Yes, we're struggling to get hits with runners in scoring position. Yes, we're having trouble just pushing a single run across. Yes, we've lost three games in a row. Yes, we trailed the division by a game and a half. And Framber said, the heck with all of that, the heck with negative momentum, the heck with our offense being terrible, the heck with all of it, I'm going to go out, I'm going to shove, and I'm going to lead my team to victory. And that's what a top of the rotation pitcher does. That's what an ace does. He is the captain. He lifts his team to a win no matter what. And that's exactly what Framber did yesterday.
The good thing is that, and we know the hitting has been, for the most part, the reason why this team has been slumping as bad as it's been slumping. But we go from talking about how good Hunter Brown has been to talking about how good that Framber has been. And you look at it and say, well, if you get any kind of a better than average Verlander, you're now looking at a rotation of four guys when you throw Blanco in the mix and say those guys are capable of giving you an advantage in most games that they're going to pitch the rest of the way. That's a great thing. In a playoff series, if those two guys, depending on where your opinion lies of who, you know, both have ace type stuff, but it doesn't matter who gets game one, as long as those are the first two guys you have in any series, in any situation, that's a damn good position to be in, because Framber has absolutely found it again. And the best thing that we can say is, we always knew he had the stuff. It's what's between his ears and how he handles his emotions. You mentioned earlier the Simeon walk and the fact that that got his ire a little bit. Whether he was actually thinking about trying to throw a perfect game or not is beside the point. Those are the moments we've seen in the past where he can unravel. The fact that he didn't, the fact that his stuff was on point, the fact that they needed it. If you got those two horses at the front and you can figure out what, you know, 3 and 4 with Verlander and Blanco, that's a good spot for this team.
Yeah, it was what we were saying last week, how the Astros top two I put up against anybody else in the American League. And you can make a case for Seattle's top two over the Astros top two, but the Seattle Mariner offense is dreadful, although your offense has been dreadful too. But if you look at every contender in the American League, I like my chances with Framber and Hunter Brown at the top. And I agree with you with the rest of the rotation. Ronel Blanco, I thought Ronel Blanco pitched very well against Tampa. It came out, you know, in a losing effort. It's third start after two previous starts where people, oh, look, he's regressing. I thought he pitched better than the line score. Ronel Blanco is fine in the middle of the rotation. Justin Verlander, at this stage of his career, is fine as a middle-of-the-rotation starter. And if you say Kikuchi, is this you say Kikuchi? Yeah, the Astros rotation is pretty deadly. And then you also have a bullpen that, yes, it hasn't been perfect this year. And Ryan Presley's blown two straight holds. And Josh Hader is very iffy if it's not a safe situation. And even if it is a safe situation, he makes you sweat a little bit. And Joe Espada's throwing Caleb Ferguson over Taylor with an E. Scott every day Tay. It's not a perfect bullpen. But if you combine that rotation with the pieces that you have in the bullpen, it's going to be very tough to score runs against the Astros. That's why it is imperative that the Astros offense figures it out. That's why it's imperative for Kyle Tucker to come back. That's why it's imperative for Joe Espada, based on whoever the pitcher they're facing that day, to play their best night. It might be why it's imperative to play Yordan Alvarez in left field. As much as I hate that, you desperate times call for desperate measures. If this offense can be above average, this team has a chance.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And the fact is that if you get into a playoff situation and Kikuchi is doing what he's doing now and continues to be able to do that, and you can move an Arrighetti into the bullpen if you need him, and his stuff translates to being a guy that can give you multiple innings but can go out and get hitters out and can strike guys out, that's just another feather in your cap and bullet in your holster to be able to use coming out of the bullpen, instead of having to see Ferguson again, instead of having to do anything where you have to worry about how deep can your bullpen be and what guys do you really truly trust to go to. That would be a big win for this team. You just got to get the bats going, and you got to keep them going. And I think that because of the way the pitching has been, you have to put your best offensive lineup out there as much as you possibly can. And if that means Yiner's DHing and Caratini's behind the plate, then for the foreseeable future, then do it.
Yeah, we'll see how much that happens, because it seems like he's not really willing to do that. It seems like he likes Caratini catching Kikuchi. Caratini's been behind the dish in both of his starts. Back to Fromber, though. I think he's disrespected when it comes to the consistency thing. Oh, he's inconsistent. He's up and down. And while that is true from, like, in a single game, Framber Valdez over the last 5 years is a dude that has a 3.23 ERA. And that's when he became a full-time starter in the COVID year. Like, 3.23 over ERA over the last 5 years is pretty dang consistent. We just mentioned the number as well, that he has the most wins of anybody in baseball in the last 5 years. That's pretty dang consistent. If you just look at the ERA last 5 years, 3.57, 3.14, 282, 345, 346. That's pretty dang consistent. So, yes, like watching Fromber in a single game can be a bit of a roller coaster. It can be bit up and down. And, yes, he can go psycho a little bit and go mental a little bit. You look at just the body of work, Fromber's been pretty dang consistent.
Oh, no doubt. I think that's why we never question his stuff. We know he has got top of the rotation, top of the league type stuff. It's just that, you know, even last night, we know that even fielding can be an adventure. And the mental part of the game, when things don't always go his way, has been something that he has struggled with at times. But the fact that he was actually chuckling and going back with the guys in the back and forth with the guys in the dugout, because he made two plays where he popped off the mound and got guys out, I thought that was actually a good thing, because now, you know, he won't feel as nervous going and attacking a baseball. But for the most part, you don't question his stuff. You just question the fact that he can sometimes come unraveled at the most inopportune times, and that can do something to a game, especially if it's a big game. You don't want to see that happen.
Yeah, I'll take who Framber Valdez is. Like, a lot of people get disappointed with him, and I do too, when he goes rogue, when he has a meltdown. But give me any one of Framber's last 5 years, and I will take that pitcher on my baseball team.
You mentioned it too.
Sorry, the game that he went rogue against the Angels was in May, was it not?
I believe so, yeah.
Because because you're right, Jeremy. I think that people who, and look, I've been guilty of this as well, because I'm prone to overreactions, but when people freak out about his inconsistency, it's really just the second half of last year. Because even if you look at this season, the only month where you would go, that's an ERA I would take, is May, which is when he went rogue against the Angels. His ERA for May was over 5, but you look at the rest of the year, it's April, it's 2.6, then in June, 3.11, then July and August under 3 again. It's really just these small fractions of time compared to the overall body of work for Framber Valdez that kind of get blown out of proportion. I guess because when he does go rogue, or when he has the moment like it's the Twins where the bench yells at him and gets in his head, it's so memorable that people hang on to it for a long time.
Well, and that's the direction I was going to. And the irony of it is the hiccups now are just smaller blips, but the one that everybody can't let go of is the only real big meltdown was that Angels game, because they had a big lead, because he did get totally frustrated and seemingly just changed everything the way he went about his business and how he handled everything to just throw balls over the middle of the plate. But other than that one massive meltdown against the Angels, he has been, you know, it's here, it's there, but it hasn't been like as much as people want to believe it's all the time. It's just that's the one that no one's going to be able to let go, especially this year.
Yeah, and people point to that when he starts to have a little bit of struggle. But newsflash, every starting pitcher, even the very best, have innings where they struggle. And I'm not disputing that Framber Valdez has those moments where it's like, hey, you're kind of losing your composure, because it's a fact. It's not something you can argue. But I think that we overstate it when we talk about, oh, he's so inconsistent. No, he's really not. He's actually been pretty much a model of consistency since he's become a starting pitcher in 2020, a full-time starting pitcher. And since that game against Anaheim on May 20th, Fromber's had 13 starts. He's 10-3, or he's 8-3. The Astros are 10-3 in those 13 games. He is 8-3 with a 3.02 ERA since that start. If you want to look at his numbers prior to that start, he had a total of 7 starts prior to the Angels start, where he went rogue, and then Joe George wanted to trade him. I wonder if Joe wants that one back. Although I might not be opposed to trading him in the offseason. But Framber, in the previous 6 starts from going rogue, had a 2.95 ERA. Yeah. So if you get rid of just the start where he went rogue, and is the reason that we say, oh, Framber is this basket case and he's inconsistent, he has an ERA right around 3. Every game that he's pitched this year, with the exception of one, with the exception of the Angels, he's got about a sub-3 ERA, right around a 3 ERA, which is one of the best pitchers in baseball. Framber is one of the best pitchers in baseball.
And no doubt about it. And I think that, you know, sometimes, and people are going to point to the, you know, when he throws balls down the right field line, and some of the ways he threw it away too. That doesn't, that's not reflective on his earned run average, but at the same time, that's part of the deal that he just needs to. It's not like it's a big fix. That's why when you see the guys on the team that are trying to do their part as well, because they know how valuable he is to the team. They know that this isn't a guy that you can just give up on or turn your back on or believe that because of that Angel start that there's something that can't be fixed. He's got such good stuff, and he's such an important piece because Verlander has taken a step back, whether it be age and or the injuries. The fact is you are going to be relying so heavily on him and Hunter Brown at the top of your rotation, no matter how far you get, and if you do get to the postseason, that those are correctable things, and the quicker you do that, the more he gets back on track.
Yeah, see, I guess my point, though, is, like, why are we trying to correct a guy who's so dang consistent and so dang good? Like, every pitcher has their flaws. Every player has their flaws. I don't think Framber Valdez is going to go from being weak mentally to strong mentally at the age of 30. Like, this is who Framber is, and if this is who Framber is, where he's a 325, he's a 3 ERA guy with the exception of one single start in a single year, he's the model of consistency since 2020, why are we talking so much about fixing the guy? The guy's been great.
But why? Because it's not that it shouldn't be that difficult to fix, and why wouldn't you want to fix it? Because the last thing you want to do is get to a key big-time situation in a big moment game and have him do something that you could have been working on to kind of get him.
I guess my point is, you don't think that Framber Valdez has been working on the psychology of the game? He's 30 years old. He's worked with a therapist. Like, I think that that's always been an area where Framber Valdez and the Astros are trying to sharpen that skill. Like, I don't think that they've failed in terms of trying to master that. But who Framber is, this is just who he's going to be.
Well, I disagree in the fact that everybody was saying the minute that from the Angels game and a couple other moments, they were like, well, where's the sports psychologist? We don't know. Yes, at 30 years old, you would think that he was, has kind of been able to fix some things. But the last thing you want to do is just go, that's who Framber is, and we'll just have to roll with it.
So do you take a pitcher who's got a 3 ERA with the exception of one start or not?
It's not that I'm not saying you don't want that. That's two totally different things. I'm not saying I don't take him. What I'm saying is if you can work with him, whether it's whether it be someone else on the team, like with mound visits or with whoever's catching him, and or with the way that they all kind of can get behind him when they see it happening, to be able to kind of nip it in the bud before it gets to be where he might have a moment, so that it keeps him from doing something other than just throwing his best pitches, and it can keep you from kind of throwing a game away, then you do it.
Yeah, I don't know how you think the Astros haven't, though. Like, the one moment that's been the thing you're describing now was against the Angels, and since then he has been dominant.
Right,
like,
not,
so I think he has sharpened that skill. I think he has improved from where he was on May 20th.
But we've seen also that there are other times when he can get ticked off with an umpire, and the guys have been kind of the ones that have gotten behind him or have tried to reel him in, and have kind of, Altuve got more demonstrative than he normally was at a time. I think it was in Minnesota. But overall, I'm not worried about his pitches, but I'm worried about the fact that we've seen him kind of lose control of a game, maybe not to the Angels level, but if whether it be you get ticked off an umpire or you throw a ball down the line or whatever like that, if you can keep working on the ways that you go about combating that, then you do it.
I just think it's a little short-sighted if we don't think that a professional athlete's working on areas of weakness in his game. I think that's part of being a professional athlete, is that they're always working on how to improve. Maybe not every player, because there's some players who just don't improve. There's some players that are lazy. There's some players that don't really have that motivation to get way better. But I think that the majority of professional athletes look at an area of their game that isn't their strong suit, and they try to work in that area of the game. And we've seen Framber try to work in that area of the game. He has had a therapist. He might still have a therapist. We just have no idea. I've never seen anybody say that Framber no longer works with a mental health coach. I've never heard that. And the one moment that we point to this year where Framber went rogue and he lost his mind, since then he's been dominant. So, like, I think that that's proof that he has worked in that area of the game. And on top of that, to your point, like, the Astros helping him out in that aspect of the game.
Yeah, and that's why I'm saying we don't know what we don't know. You would hope that he still has the sports psychologist or whoever he was working with. We haven't heard either way, but they were pretty vocal when they did finally get him with one to kind of let us know when they started and the thing, and that they were working together. But it's because he's such a big piece and he's so damn good that whether we know it or not, you would hope that they're doing everything they can now to prevent it from happening in a big time moment.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. I'm going to buzzkill Branham, something from yesterday's game. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Something I can never buzzkill, though, is the greatness that is Pro Dunk Hoops. They make the highest quality basketball goals you'll ever find. They are outstanding. They are great, better than anything you'll find in the big box stores. Tempered glass backboard gives you that true, authentic, real feel that you see in the arenas and the gyms at the next level. Stainless steel hardware. It's rust-proof, which is a much have to have in Houston. Breakaway rim. Why do you need a breakaway rim? Because it's height adjustable. You can lower it anywhere from 5 feet to 10 feet, anywhere in between. And with their new goal, Thor, you can raise and lower the goals with a drill. Lightning adjust feature, they call it. It's fun to do. It's easy to do. Anywhere from 5 to 10 feet in a matter of seconds. Their accessories next level. LED night kits for light kits for night play. It's dark in Houston during the day. You want to play at night when the sun goes down. Don't blame you. Some districts started school today, which is crazy. But your kids, maybe they're not going to get home till the sun goes down. So get these LED light kits so they can play with their basketball goal all throughout the evening. Now, you know, you got to get them to bed at some point. Backstop nets, pull pad lettering, lots more. And you can order everything, including professional installation online. That's right. The pros from Pro Dunk Hoops will professionally install your goal. Perfect height, perfectly straight. You don't have to worry about a thing. You don't have to install a thing. Let the pros at Pro Dunk do all the work for you. Give them a call at 281-351-9822 and visit ProDunk.com. That's ProDunk.com.
ESPN. 97.5.
It's the Killer Bees, and I honestly have no idea what's happening next. Could it be the next great big food debate? The biggest Joel rant of all time? Jeremy trolling someone to the point of crying? Or just some actual bees making some honey? Well, let's find out. It's time for the Wheel of Bits.
Oh my goodness, would you look at this. What an enormous spin.
It's time for Buzzkill Branham.
Buzzkill Branham. This one comes naturally. Buzzkill, something that happened in that no-hitter yesterday. I don't care as much as most people about a pitcher on my team throwing a no-hitter. Did I want Fromber to throw the no-hitter yesterday? Yeah, I wanted Fromber to throw the no-hitter yesterday. I wanted him to get that done. I wanted him to complete his second no-hitter, which would be in the elite in franchise history. But did I need Fromber to throw a no-hitter? Did I want it as bad as a bunch of these other Astro fans? No, not really. I didn't really care that much whenever Seager hit the two-run homer. I just want victories. I just want wins. You're a game and a half back in the division. I cared very little. Cared a little bit, but very, very little, and far less than most fans about Fromber throwing the no-hitter.
Look, to me, it's always good to see. I was watching it with Taylor, so I was kind of hoping that she would see and start to understand like what a no-hitter is. And for that perspective, it was cool. But you've seen more and more now. You talk about Paul Skeens and guys like that and younger pitchers too, where at a certain point, because of what it can actually do to you when guys are chasing that no-hitter, that you throw so many pitches that it can screw you up a ways too. I was more concerned with the pitch count than anything else. I know that we've gone back and forth. The fact, too, that people get all into this superstition part of it. And whether it's Twitter or TK, and we've asked them about it, but, like, some will, some won't. I mean, the fact that people, like, hold their breath and get upset and think that because a broadcaster or someone on Twitter said the words no-hitter.
Yeah, those are annoying, too. I get a kick, too, out of people that, like, they say so much about it. Like, they're like, oh, no. Like, I can't believe this guy's saying that. I can't believe that. Like, it's that part of it, too. But then it's also, like, people who are like, I'm not going to say anything right now. Like, we know what you're talking about, man. You're like, you're not being coy. You're not being shrewd. Like, you're not really, you're also being superstitious. Like, I'm not going to say anything right now. You're, like, saying it without saying it. Yeah. And you think it's cute and coy and shrewd, but it's really not.
Well, isn't it funny, too, how it's like, and guys share it amongst each other, but, like, the fact that they're like, and if you look at the line score right now, there's a lot of zeros there, or they look to try and get that just that so that you can catch on even more, but at a certain point, we've kind of outgrown it. I mean, that's the best way I can put it is we've kind of outgrown it. I get it in the past. That was the kind of thing you just don't do. And there wasn't the internet the way it is too. But now it's like everybody knows one way or another, whether you say it or don't say it on Twitter, someone else is going to put it out there to where we all know what's going on.
Yeah, I'm not going to say anything on Twitter, but if I was calling a game, I would, especially on radio. especially on radio. I think you have to.
And so you wouldn't go to the, without actually saying that, you wouldn't?
Probably not. I'd probably be like, he's through 8 no-hit innings. If Vin Scully didn't believe in the jinxes, I'm not going to believe in the jinxes. Like, go listen to a Vin Scully no-hitter call. He's like, the no-hitter on the line. Like, I don't believe in it. Like, what somebody says isn't going to impact the outcome of an at-bat. And TK didn't dance around it.
No,
TK
didn't dance around at all.
He might not have said that Fromber has a no-hitter going, but there were multiple times where he's like, well, the perfect game is gone, but he still has this. Or there was times when, like, the Astros have 7 hits, and they have everyone in the game. Like, little things, like subtle references. He might not say Fromber's working on a no-hitter, but he might have once. He might have actually said it once. But if he didn't, it were always subtle references that people knew that he was throwing the no-hitter.
Don't you feel like, too, everybody individually, it's kind of how they feel about the superstitious part of baseball, to where some of the old school broadcasters, that's just taboo. You just can't even hint around about it. You just don't talk about it. But I think that there are still some of the younger and newer broadcasters that respect it enough that they don't want to break that tradition, where other guys are just kind of more your way of thinking, I owe it to my listeners to give them every detail. And that's one of the key details.
I don't know of a single radio guy or TV guy who wouldn't address it. I haven't heard.
For baseball?
Yeah.
Man, really?
I mean, that's what we're talking about.
Well, I think that's more of a player and Twitter thing.
Yeah, I don't know of it. I could be wrong. And I don't watch every single broadcast and listen to every single network, so I don't know. But I believe that every single TV radio guy will bring it up in some form or fashion.
I think there are a lot of guys that are the old school guys that try and stay away from it as much. They might try to do the subtle, try to hint around. But I think that there are older, especially the old school guys, but I think there are guys that just, they don't want to.
Yeah, I don't know that. I really don't know. I'm ignorant to it. I would be surprised if there's one out there. 8341, I don't know if y'all noticed in the game last night or not, but in the LinkedIn, the Ranger Stadium had the billboard written all up, no hits, no runs, big blue background with big blue, white letters. So I guess they were trying to do the reverse jinx on that.
Is he talking about the facade?
I'm guessing maybe the ribbon board.
Yeah, that goes around the decks. I did not notice that, but it's creative.
409 Josh, has Fromber done enough for y'all to give him the big extension?
Still, well, look, again, the details matter. I think that he's not a young pitcher for first and foremost, and secondly, especially with the way pitchers are going through arm problems and having issues with the pitch clock and how frequently they have to go about their business kind of differently than they've done it in the past. I don't think at his age I'm giving him a long-term big-money deal. Does he warrant a discussion for a couple of years? Yes, but he's probably going to go chase his one big contract and get it somewhere else.
I'm not a believer in signing pitchers to big deals, even if I think that they're good. The Astros have made two, you could even say three, contract extensions in recent memory with starting pitchers that have failed. Two of those three were incredibly team-friendly. Lance McCullers, whenever he signed his contract, was incredibly team-friendly. Look at the ROI on that contract. It's been abysmal. They signed Christian Javier. At the time, everybody loved it. It was an incredibly team-friendly deal. What has the ROI on that deal been? Abysmal. Justin Verlander signed a $66 million two-year deal, or a $60 million two-year deal, whatever it was, $33 million per year for 2 years, pitched in one game on that two-year contract. I'm not a big, I think it's terrible ROI to sign starting pitchers to long-term contracts, no matter who they are. So I wouldn't sign Fromber to a contract extension. And then Blankers brings up a good point about the age factor of it, too. Signing a pitcher is already incredibly risky to a long-term deal. Now signing a pitcher that it's in his 30s to a long-term deal, I wouldn't. Which is why I would consider trading him in the offseason.
So let me ask you this. So we're both on the same page in terms of not giving the big deal. But you mentioned the McCullers deal and the Javier deal, and that's where I was thinking in terms of, we've already seen that happen. It's backfired. If you look at it and say, what's the dollar figure? How high would you go for Fromber and for how many years?
It's not realistic. It's not
in the 20s.
The highest that I would go for Fromber? No, I would go up to 30 something million for Fromber, but it'd only be 2 to 3 years, and he would laugh at me. It's not realistic. Fromber Valdez, if I were the general manager, would not be back with the Houston Astros.
Yeah, I would
trade him in the offseason, quite frankly.
I think you honestly should start thinking about that right now, because of the fact that you're going to get one of the big boys that has a ton of money that is not going to blink an eye and be able to go, you know, 5 years plus at 35, 40 easy.
Yeah, he would get way more than I'm willing to offer him. And I understand that, which is why I wouldn't disrespect him with the offer. I would disrespect him by trading him in the offseason. I'd kick around trading Tucker in the offseason.
But don't you think that, at least from a, you have to at least make the offer. right? It's whether it be
Sure. I mean, I don't know. Like, he might just be so insulted by it that it might be better to not even make the offer.
Who's Fromber's agent? Do we know off the top of our head? Because if you want to be in on guys who also have the same agent, you might not want to run the risk of offending that agent. Like,
Octagon is his agent. I've never heard of him.
Yeah, I have no idea. I have no idea who else they represent. But if you're pursuing another player, or you have another player to your team that's about to come up for a deal, then maybe you don't run the risk of insulting them.
Because I think what you do is you call up whoever Octagon is, and you're like, "Hey, Octagon, we love Fromber. It's our club philosophy that we don't sign pitchers to long-term deals. This is the most we would do, but I'm not going to insult you with that offer. If you get back down to that, then let's chat, but I'm not going to insult you with that offer." I think that's how you handle it.
3-year deal seems reasonable, because as great as he's been, it doesn't change his age.
But don't you think he'll get more than that on the open market?
I do. I think he's probably looking at about a 5-year deal on the open market, so I think if I'm the Astros GM, I'd also be out.
I think, and you watch how other teams have handled it, too, to say, you know, to what Jeremy said. If I'm dealing with the agent, I say, go out and get your best offer. Go out and test the market.
Like if the market, Giants with Saquon?
If the market, well, yeah, or the Clint Capella deal, when Clint Capella thought he was a max deal, but in that case, he wasn't. Fromber's going to get big money from somebody for a lot more years, and the Astros are going to. But at least you, to avoid the disrespect, you say, hey, go out and test the market. See what the market says. Bring it back to us. Let us know. We love him. And as Jeremy said, you know, he's done a lot of great things here, but we don't want to disrespect him, and we want to see, you know, we want you to be happy.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. The Astros are putting these rookie hitters, although some of them have fared well, in a terrible spot to succeed. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
I really hope that the Astro rookie hitters come back and dominate and complete the lineup and make it a balanced lineup and lead to the Astros having some offensive success. I really hope for that. I think the Astros have put them in a really, really tough spot. Now, maybe some of these guys sink or swim, and some of them will swim while others sink. We'll see. The time is out on that. But I don't love how, okay, you trade Loper Fido, you're going to bring up Pedro Leon, and you're like, okay, Pedro Leon, because you have no other corner outfielders, is the only guy that people can look to for hope. I always like pairing a rookie with a veteran whenever you have a team that is a contender. Same thing with Zach DiZinzo. It's like, okay, the offense is so bad, we're in this dry spell. You had a terrible game one against Arlington where the offense was putrid. Now we're going to call him up and just throw him into the wolves. Which, look, again, I don't mind that he's getting playing time. I don't mind that you're looking for him to help. I don't like the fact that you really don't have any other alternatives. I don't like the fact that there's not a veteran on the team that he has to beat out. And I really don't like the fact that you're doing it whenever the team is struggling so bad. Because now you're looking at the fans, looking at these players. The only hope we have are these young rookies. And I think it's a terrible spot to put a rookie in for that rookie to have success.
Yeah, look, it's a fair point because of the fact that, you know, you put so much on these guys coming up your system already. And it's one thing to get acclimated to the major leagues. But now, it's not just being called up in September your first time, or called up in the middle of the season or early in the season or starting the season, where you can get seasoning, you can understand and kind of from the clubhouse and all the adjustments you got to make. But now you're, you know, every veteran in that clubhouse is looking at you, you know, to expect that you're going to have to try and help them out. And the fact that it's probably going to be multiple guys. I would assume Whitcomb's coming up pretty soon here. He continues to do things for Sugarland to where he probably warrants the opportunity. But it's not like it's going to be, hey, just, you know, hang out, and when we give you a chance, we get you a chance. He's probably going to get some big at-bats, just like DiCenzo's going to get some big at-bats. And you're right, it's not fair. And the thing is that people are, rightfully so, should look at this and say, I would put more stock in trusting that DiCenzo and Whitcomb and Leon or whoever else would give me a better chance than going out and hoping some of the guys that get DFA'd are guys that not only you can get, but once you get them, they're going to be able to contribute. There's a reason why they're getting DFA'd. You're right. It's a very difficult situation for those guys to be in.
Now, maybe I'm just terribly wrong on this, and one of these guys just doesn't care about the pressure, and then they do a swim, not sink. Because right now there's two rookies. I think Pedro Leon, and way too early to determine like what they've done. Pedro Leon currently right now is sinking. Zach DiZinzo 0-for-4 yesterday, but has had a two-hit game today. So maybe he's in the process of swimming. And maybe that's how you weed out these guys. But I saw The Athletic today wrote an article saying that how the Astros are taking a page from the Rangers book and how they did this with Evan Carter last year. The Rangers, when they brought up Evan Carter, were playing pretty well. They did it when rosters expanded. So it wasn't like, we're bringing up Evan Carter to save this offense or to get rid of a bad offensive player. They didn't even take a player off the roster because they did it when rosters expanded. And then they kind of let him ease into the bigs. And then all of a sudden, he's in the playoff lineup hitting in the top three or four spots in the batting order, whereas the Astros are currently struggling. They're fading in their division. They're a game and a half back. The Astros offense is fading, and then it's like, okay, here's one final Hail Mary. Hope this guy can turn it on. And yes, we all hope that guy can turn it on. I just don't necessarily think it's putting the rookie in the best position to succeed. 713-780-3776-6030. Sending young players to the show is smart. Get them a couple innings in the show, get a feel, come back more comfortable. Also, so now you have guys you can say have Major League Baseball experience for trade. That could also work the other way. I mean, if you come up to the bigs and you are absolutely awful and you show absolutely nothing, that could also dim your star. It could lose some trade value. It could also ruin guys. Like, there's guys that a lot of times aren't ready for the show. They get called up. They go 0-for-82. And then you send them back down and their career's kind of ruined for whatever reason. So I see where you're coming from. And I do think that that happens sometimes. But it's not 100% bulletproof. In fact, I would say it's a coin flip.
That's where I was going in the fact that it could go one of two ways. Yes, you can find out a guy that has the it factor, that doesn't have any situation that seems to be where it seems to be too big for him, and he's able to do whatever you need him to do. But you can also get a guy that maybe has kind of come up your system quickly, or looks like he's got a boatload of talent, and then he gets ruined by the fact that he can't, you know, mentally and physically what he goes through, and the fact that he feels like he got dominated affects him in a negative or an adverse way, and then suddenly you lose a guy that you were kind of counting on for your future. So it is tough, and some guys are made for it, and some guys you got to ease them in. And it's going to be more than one guy. We know that's already Leon, and it's already DiCenzo. It's Whitcomb. You don't know if there's anybody else that's going to be counted on. You did it earlier with your pitching staff too. And so, you know, some guys... What was the guy that started the one game, the other Taylor, that they brought up from AA?
Blake Taylor?
No. The guy, he came in from AA. They needed a spot start, and he just blew up.
Oh, you're thinking of Blair Henley.
Blair Henley.
It was in Arlington.
Yeah, and Blair Henley's one of those guys where, you know what, you never know if he's going to get another chance, but some guys mentally can come in and realize he got rocked and start thinking about, can he get guys out? And I'm not saying that's definitely going to be him, but... With hitters, it works the same way, and the mental part of it is big for some of these young guys.
Gun to your head, who's going to have more major league success, Zach DiZinzo or Pedro Leon?
I would say DiZinzo.
Yeah, I would too. I really don't have to think twice either.
No, but we talked about this the minute that the day after the trade happened, when we were able to digest it a little bit too. I do think it's interesting that I don't know who's going to have a better major league career, Pedro Leon or Joey Loperfido.
I'd go Loperfido.
He made a diving catch, did you see it? And everybody lost their mind again, but he still has struggles with fast and striking out.
I honestly don't think either one are going to be starters. Like, I think Pedro Leon's going to be a backup outfielder that is a platoon guy, that's a good defense guy with defensive speed. I think he's a bench guy. I think he's a bench outfielder. I also think Joey Loperfido is a bench outfielder.
Yeah, I think
I'm not
is.
Sure that Joey Loperfido is an everyday corner outfielder on a playoff caliber team. But of the two, I would say that Loperfido has a better career. Now, similar roles. Now, Loperfido lefty, Leon right. Righty, but similar roles, more fourth outfielders. Maybe they start on average to bad teams, but I'm not losing sleep about losing Loperfido. The guy I was losing sleep over was Jake Bloss.
Yeah, Bloss. Yeah, and that's kind of the more I looked at it too. It's like, well, if you got, you know, guys that are all similar, and you say, well, it's a wash, even if they're all the same, then it's worth making the move. Yes, it looks like you gave up a ton at the time. The pitching is what you always can never have enough of and always, you know, hate to lose because of the fact that he did kind of rocket through the system and he looked like he had what it took to be a guy that can eat up innings for you and be in the rotation for a while.
713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. Aside from CJ Stroud, Who is the most important player on the Houston Texans offense? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.